And it's good afternoon. It's from me, Alec Milne, here this afternoon, this rather windy and blustery day. And today we have a special for you. We have Walking with Owls.
Hello, I'm Ian Maguire. I'm a freelance speaker and an owl conservationist, and I operate his Wild Owl.
Yes, indeed. We'll hear all about Ian Maguire and Wild Owl, and we'll be meeting a tawny owl.
Just getting to the end of this event.
It does.
So what do you think of that one?
It's really cute.
What do you think of the tawny owl?
It's beautiful.
And we'll also meet a barn owl.
So, let's say hello to a little friend of mine. And you're quite right, this is a barn owl.
And that's all coming up later. First of all, all the music is themed to birds in one way or the other, and this is the Carpenters with Close to You, and they begin talking about birds.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are just begun to live, white lace and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our way.
We've only begun
before the rising sun. We fly. Just begun.
And that was a beautiful medley there from the Carpenters with Close to You, You've Only Just Begun, and it mentioned birds, because the subject of today is walking with owls. Let's start. We're going to Arnosville Cemetery in the company of Anthea and myself and some the good citizens of Bristol, and we meet with Ian McGuire.
So, we're just about to go into Arnosville Cemetery. It's dark and it's cold, and I'm with...
Hello, I'm Ian McGuire. I'm a freelance speaker and an owl conservationist, and I operate as Wild Owl.
Can you tell us why you got, how you got into this, and in you know, how you came to be an expert in owls?
Well, I wouldn't call myself an expert, but 13 years ago or so, I joined a charity that was helping wild birds of prey, and used to do a lot of volunteer work. And once you get out in the field and see the plight of birds like barn owls, and you realise how their lives are made so difficult by the loss of habitats and the way we manage the countryside, it's not very difficult to get very attached to the cause. And from that point on, I was converted, and since then I've been doing what I can to help the birds in one way or the other. So it ended up with me finishing my job 4 years ago and creating Wild Owl, which is my own little enterprise to educate the public.
How much do you think you've managed to change the public's view of what's happening in the countryside?
Well, I'm one of a band of people that are trying to do their bit for wild owls in particular in the countryside. And I'd like to think that in all the work that I do, and I reach about 15,000 people a year through talks and school visits and owl prowls, other events, I'd like to think that once they've had the experience of learning about these birds, they have a better understanding of the things we might be able to do to help them. So I'm only one little person that's trying to do my bit, but the more people that can take on board what I'm saying, then hopefully that can filter through and we can help the birds, because it's all about the birds.
So do you think as time goes by the situation's actually getting worse for wildlife in this country?
Well, we have a problem in this country in terms of sometimes the ignorance about habitats in particular, because all wildlife, whether it's owls, birds or other mammals, insects, they all need habitats to live in. And whilst there are lots of volunteers and experienced people that are working very hard to try and help and protect wildlife and their habitats, unfortunately there's also a huge amount of ignorance, and that's the biggest problem in this country, that money seems to come before the planet, so to speak.
So would you put politicians in that category of ignorance?
There are some politicians that are sensitive to wildlife issues, but if you look at the news most evenings, it doesn't tend to be about habitat destruction and species lost. It's all about money and development and other things. We are very, very money orientated in this country particularly. I think you've only got to look at the success of the BBC's programme Spring Watch, and their other programmes, and the audience numbers, to really get a feel for what we think. A lot of public love wildlife and we want wildlife protected, and having supermarkets springing up in every small village and A roads and dual carriageways built to provide access to all these growing towns, that is not the way forward for wildlife. We'll end up with losing a lot of species over the years.
Do you put pressure on local county councils then to consider the wildlife before they grant these planning applications?
That's not my role. I mean, I'm working in a freelance role and trying to bring in a living through education. So I reach the public more than the councils, but certainly there are lots of organisations, wildlife organisations, that are putting pressure on councils. And what I would say to you is that if you can select a good wildlife charity, the wildlife trusts are a great example, the more members they have, the more lobbying power they have on government. So joining a charity isn't just a wildlife charity isn't just about giving them funds, it's about giving them power to their arm and power on government. The reason we don't have a ban on cats in this country is because there's too many voters that like cats.
So finally, what's your website?
The website is wildowl.co.uk.
There we are. Strong words there from Ian McGuire of Wild Owl. And we'll start off with the owl Prowl itself that took place in Arnesville a couple of weeks ago, after we've heard from a group called Owl City, would you believe, and they're on the wing.
Stars around and watch them fall away into the Hudson Bay and plummet out of sight and sound. The open summer breeze will sweep you through the hills where I live in the Alpine Heights. Below the northern lights, I spend my coldest nights alone, awake and thinking of the weekend we were in love. Tops can be so awfully dull, a thousand miles from the tide, but photos on the walls of New York shopping malls distract me so I stay inside. I wish the rocket stayed over the promenade, 'cause I would make a hook and eye and fish them from the sky. My darling, she and I, we're hanging on, so take us high to sing the world goodbye. I am floating away, lost in a silent ballet. I'm dreaming you're out in the blue, and I am right beside you, awake to take in the view. Late nights and early parades, still photos and noisy arcades. My darling, on the wing, look down and keep on singing, and we can go anywhere.
And that's Owl City with On the Wing. Anyway, let's get back to the owl. This is an owl prowl, walking with owls, and we're in Arnosfield Cemetery, and it's 2 weeks ago, and this is Ian McGuire, and he's got a tawny owl.
Just getting to the end of this event.
It does.
So what do you think of that one?
It's really cute.
What do you think of the tawny owl?
It's beautiful.
Different
colours.
It's
so cute.
What does the owl look like to you? Describe her. How would you describe them?
Imagine somebody couldn't see it and you were trying to describe it. What colours are they?
It's like after snow when there's lightly snowed on the ground.
Okay.
It's a really nice colour.
Do you think it looks like any of the trees here?
No.
What part of the tree do you think it looks like the most? The bark of a tree. Well done.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not been Specsavers, has he? So that's right, the bark of a tree. This is an owl, which is a woodland owl. And the tawny owl is very much at home near trees. It can hide away up in a tree, either during the day when it doesn't want to be seen. And it may also, though, decide to go into a tree hollow and hide away there. But this is an owl that doesn't have the long wings of the barn owl that we had out earlier on, and the long wings of the short-eared or the long-eared owl that we've looked at. This is a bird with shorter wings because it normally will be staying around its woodland environment, and within the trees, long wings would be a problem. It would get in the way. Tawny owls have got a long tail compared to a bird like the barn owl because they have a lot of agility when they're flying between the trees. They can literally turn at right angles. Very, very agile birds. That's great for chasing things. Maybe for chasing birds. Maybe for flying in between the trees. This is the owl. Tuit-tuwoo. However, that tuit-tuwoo is often two owls. It's often a female with a kiwik and then the male with the hooting. So when you hear tuit-tuwoo, it's generally a pair communicating with each other. Now, when we do these owl prowls in the autumn, it's this bird that we're hoping to talk to in the sites where I do these owl prowls all over the region. And that's because in the autumn, they're arguing over territories. Tawny owls that live here at Arnosvale in the autumn will know that there's lots of young birds coming in from other areas, parks in the city, maybe from the countryside, looking for new territories to live. And they'll be defending their boundaries. They'll be patrolling all around their own site, saying, right, any other new birds coming in here, we're going to kick them out, basically. So, and that's what all this vocal calling is all about in the autumn. So the residents here at Arnosvale, the people that live overlooking the cemetery, in the autumn, they'd hear a lot of calling when there are tawny owls around on this site. It's all arguing. And there's some weird noises. It even gets to the point where there's wails going on with these birds. Very, very strange calls. Now, the favourite food for a tawny owl in a site like this would be wood mice. It's like a roast dinner to a tawny owl. But they'll also eat amphibians, insects, birds, lots of invertebrates, some beetles, grasshoppers maybe. They might even tackle reptiles if they can find them. So there's all sorts of things these birds eat. So that helps them to survive at different times of the year, because at some times of the year, particularly in the winter, there's not going to be many insects and invertebrates available for this bird, so that's when they'll be more reliant on small mammals. And at a site like Arnosvale, as I mentioned earlier, lots of headstones, lots of untidy areas, it's all places for little creatures to hide, for mice and voles and things like that, even rats to hide. Now, the urban tawny owls and the city tawny owls, if they don't have enough places to find those sorts of prey, particularly tawny owls that might live right in the middle of the city centre in a park, well, they'll be perhaps more dependent on other birds. So they become quite good at catching birds like sparrows and starlings and other species of bird. And of course, rats are important. So this is a very special bird. Tawny owls are early breeders, so they're going to be breeding usually before other species of owl, and that's why, again, we're not calling them tonight, because if I was to sit here now and call tawny owls in, if there were birds nearby that heard me, they're going to come over and start calling back. Well, that might be a male that's providing the food for the female who might be sat on eggs now, and for him to be flying around defending his territory is not only going to take him away from his duties, but it's, I'm going to upset them, but it's also going to use up his energy. And it's not fair to use up his fat reserves in that way. So we have to be very responsible when we actually call owls. Whereas in the autumn, as I say, it's all part of the process they're going through anyway, but still has to be done responsibly. Now, this bird here, you'll notice, has great camouflage, and as I mentioned, when they are seen in the daytime, other birds don't like them. So I've been in woodlands near a tawny owl nest box, and I've been there for half an hour talking to people about different things, and just as I'm about to leave, as I've walked towards a tree, two tawny owls have flown out of that tree. They were sat there the whole time I was there. And they just relied on the ivy that was running up the tree to give them camouflage, to give them cover. So they're very good at concealing themselves. Any questions about this bird?
What's its vision better than ours?
With owls, they...
What? Because it's got huge eyes.
She's got huge eyes. This is, again, a night owl. So this bird is able to operate in very, very low light conditions. Owls have got a special structure to their eye. They've got more rods than cones. Our eyes have got more cones in our structure, which means that we get daylight vision definition during the daytime. But when it's dark like this, then, of course, we're not as good at seeing things. These animals, these birds, rather, they have... a different structure to their eyes, which gives them enhanced night vision, which means during the day they have fairly good eyesight, but it's not colour vision and it's not very high definition vision. But once we get to night time, they can see like she is now. She's looking around and she's looking into the trees. Now, we can't see anything. We need a really strong torch to see into those trees. If there was anything in those trees, like perhaps another owl, this bird would be able to see it without any torches. She has superb vision. It's a very complicated structure in their eyes. They have a reflector at the back, a tapetum, which reflects light that goes into the iris. But it's a very, very complicated structure. But that eyesight is very good. And of course, her ears, you can't see her ears. Well, that's because they're tucked either side of her eyes under her facial disc. If I just get her to turn around. Here, babes, here we go, turn around. I don't know if you're going to see this. I'm a little bit blinded here. I'm not moving my head around. It's going to be very difficult. But basically, imagine her facial disc. If you peel the front of her facial disc off, or just forward, it exposes a hole in her head. That's what her ears are, basically, are holes. They have really superb hearing. The facial disc, if you look at an owl, if you look on my website, you'll see lots of photographs of owls, lots of information about owls at wildowl.co.uk. Another plug there for the radio. I used to be in the sales game, you can tell that, can't you? Well, basically, if you look at the owls, you'll notice that their facial disc feathers are different to the other feathers. Because all of this bird, none of this bird is wasted. Every part of this bird is on it to locate and hunt and catch its prey, and the feathers on the facial disc are skeletal. So when the sound hits that facial disc, the facial disc enhances sound. The ears are apart so they can work independently, and the feathers push the sound into the facial disc. The edge of the facial disc has got harder feathers around the edge, which stops the sound rolling off the side of the facial disc and basically feeds it into those ears. And she's got a little flap on her ear that she can open up when she's hunting. So, you know, it's a very highly sophisticated system. These birds are so evolved for the job which they do. They really are highly sophisticated hunters, and you would not believe what their capabilities are. I don't know what it is because I haven't got the same capabilities, but she does, and I know with having birds like this, I've got on my shoulder now. What's this fly on my shoulder? If you pull on my coat, you're in trouble, mate. Having a bird like this, I don't, again, condone having birds. There's no good reason for people to have owls as a pet. As an educator, then, of course, I benefit from having these educational birds. And one of the things that always amazes me is when I'm with them in their aviaries at night, how quiet they are, completely silent flight when she goes past me, how good her vision is. I can look across to the Leilandais, three gardens away, and even with a torch, I can't see a thing. She'll stare, and 10 minutes later, a tawny owl flies over. She's seen it. They really have fantastic vision, so we never underestimate the power of these birds.
And that was Ian McGuire with a Tony Owl. And this is the Golden Oldies Hour with me, Alec Milne, and we're on an owl prowl, walking with owls. And on the theme of birds, this is Tom Frager and Birds Ask For You. And that was Tom Frager and Birds Ask For You. We're doing an owl prowl and we're in Arnosfield Cemetery in the company of Ian McGuire, walking with owls. This is the Barn Owl.
Just to recap,
about yourself. I don't know if Mary introduced me properly, but my name's Ian McGuire, and I operate as a freelance speaker and an owl conservationist, and I run a little enterprise called Wild Owl, and I've been doing this now for 4 years. I used to have a full-time job, managing director of a company, selling tools, hated it, and was very involved in owl conservation in South Gloucestershire, and decided that really I needed to do this from a living. So I've kind of dumped all of the benefits of directorship to do what I really enjoy, and I'm still here four years later, which is quite good. So all the events, wildlife walks and things like that will be up on the Arnest Vale website. So let's say hello to a little friend of mine. And you're quite right, this is a barn owl. Now I must stress that I use these birds to educate on them, basically, to show you, aren't they fantastic? Wouldn't it be such a sad thing if we lost barn owls from the countryside? Well, if we continue to destroy their habitats and have ignorance about their requirements, then eventually we won't have any barn owls, because the weather's doing a good job in making life difficult for barn owls, and then when we start destroying their feeding habitats, we can help them on their way to effectively dying out in this country. Now, barn owls are all over the world. They're not found in the poles, but they're found in the Africas, so in Asia, all those sorts of places. You have species of barn owl. They don't all look like this one. This is Tito Alba Alba, which is our white-breasted barn owl. And this bird used to have a name. But the reason why she now no longer has a name is because I suddenly twigged that by giving her a name, it means that when she sat here on my fist, it gives her the sort of suggests that she's a pet. And she's not. She's a working bird. She's a co-director. She doesn't get any shares, doesn't get any wages. All she gets is two chicks when she gets home. But she is an ambassador for the work I do to say, aren't they amazing? Do you think she's lovely?
Yeah.
Beautiful,
so
isn't
we're
she?
We're looking at a barn owl now, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Okay. Shine your torches. Don't you think that's an amazing sight? Blink and pretend that's a wild barn owl. And all over the country, there are churchyards full of mice and voles and other small mammals that the local barn owls will often go into to find their food. Because under all these stones and the untidy corners of these sites, there's lots and lots of places for these small mammals to hide. And that's what the barn owl comes in for. Now, that is the way to enjoy owls. So they need these habitats, but of course the barn owl, although it will use churchyards, most important for barn owls is open farmland. They eat voles. Voles account for about 85% of a barn owl's diet in a healthy situation. And voles are little small mice-like creatures that live, you can come closer now by the way, I just wanted to get the feel for that. Voles live in rough grass, uncut grass. And so they, when a barn owl is hunting in an open field that's been left uncut, this bird is looking for the little voles that are living in the grass, but they're not living in short grass, they're living in long grass, and these voles are living in what we call the understory of the grass. And that understory gives the voles shelter, and the voles are vegetarians, they eat the grass itself. So they're living in this environment which is very unique for them, and the owls of course can benefit from that because they will hunt and they'll be listening for the squeaks of these small mammals. So when you get voles that are either arguing or just communicating, that squeak, high frequency squeak, will be heard by a hunting predator, because barn owls are a hearing owl. They have what we call a facial disc. This bird's not being very cooperative because she's got her back to us. Not very, very, very polite, is she? She's looking around. Of course, she can see a lot better than we can. She hasn't got headlights on her forehead. She's got superb night vision. But she is much better at hearing her prey than seeing it. Apart from the fact her prey is often hiding in that grass. So what she'll do on silent wings, she will be hunting over a field, backwards and forwards, what we call quartering, very low to the ground, looking down and listening. And when she hears something, she'll hover, and if she hears that a second time,
down she goes with her face following the sound, and then plunging down with her talons to grab that small mammal. Now, she has a very special hearing system. She's got what we term as asymmetrical hearing. She's got one ear that's higher than the other, and one ear that's slightly larger than the other. That means that when she gets a squeak from a vole, she hears it twice. And that enables her to, where the two points cross, she can actually pinpoint that vole without seeing it. So they're fantastic hunters. There's just a problem. This wonderful system that they use to find their food goes out the window when it's very blowy and when it's very rainy. For starters, their silent wings, their silent feathers, which are very soft and specially designed to make no noise, when it rains, they become noisier, but also the bird can't actually fly when it gets so waterlogged. And this can become a problem for the barn owl, because A, it can't hunt in the rain, but of course, if it's blowing as well, they can't hear their prey. So harsh weather conditions can really put a lot of pressure on a barn owl. And if you get night after night of bad weather, that's when you usually see these birds coming out in the daytime, in the lulls in between the bad weather. Now in Britain, we get a lot of rain, don't we? And that's why barn owls in this country have it hard when it's bad weather, combined with what we do to their environments.
Could you just give us a sound of the barn owl,
please? Well, I'll do my best. Barn owl's not the easiest sound to do, but it's the barn owl is what other people would loosely term as a screech owl. And it's basically like a that sort of screech. They do all sorts of screeches. With this bird here, who is a captive bred barn owl, she has a little bit of communication, does she does with me, which is like a chitter. Can you talk to me? That's what a barn owl would do with its mate.
Yeah, there we are. That's all about the barn owl. Time is moving on, and we've got some more owls to come up. We've got the long-eared owl coming up, and we're talking to the children, and we also meet Mary Wood of the Avon Wildlife Trust. But on the theme of owls and birds, this is the Kingston Trio, and this is Yellow Bird.
That is very sad, makes me feel so bad. You can fly away, in the sky away. You're more lucky than me. I also had a pretty girl. She's not with me today. They're all the same, the pretty girls. They tend the nest, then they fly away. Yellow bird, up high in banana tree. Yellow bird, you sit all alone like me. Better fly away, in the sky away. Pick her coming soon, pick from night to noon. Black and yellow you, like banana too. They might pick you someday. Wish that I were a yellow bird. I'd fly away with you. But I am not a yellow bird. So here I sit, not nothing else to do.
And that was a Kingston Trio with Yellow Bird. and we're on an owl prowl in Arnisfail. And come away from the owl's prowl. This is Eric Sims describing our next owl. It's the long-eared owl.
The long-eared owl prefers conifers, but where it's common, it can also be found in broad-leaved woods and copses. This is its late winter moaning song.
And that was Eric Sims giving us the long-eared owl, and this is Ian McGuire in Arnisfail Cemetery.
All right. Okay, then. So let's have a look at another species of owl. Now, this particular species of owl has got what looks like ears on its head, and they look like quite long ears on its head. I wonder what type of owl that is. Any guesses?
Long-eared owl.
A long-eared owl. Well, look at that. We have an expert in the crowd. So the long-eared owl. Now, the long-eared owl is an owl that people often confuse with the very large European eagle owl. And they also don't realise that this bird is living in the UK. We've got somewhere between 2,000 and possibly 5,000 pairs of these birds. The reason we're the people that do the recording are so vague on it is because it's a very elusive owl. So it's difficult to find and difficult really to monitor. So long-eared owls don't get the same attention from the general public and certainly from other people as a result of the fact that it's actually quite secretive and they don't think about it. Whereas a white barn owl that flies across the road all over the country, in the countryside, and maybe will nest near a farm building or even near somebody's house, they're much more visible. These aren't, but they're there, and it tends to get forgotten. Those what appear to be ears on its head, of course, aren't ears. They are just feathers, and those feathers are used for communication. They're a mood indicator. And they're also used if the bird wants to make it look as though he's got horns. And if something is threatening him, he'll fluff his wings out, make himself all fluffed up, open those eyes, which have got very orange colour to them, and then those feathers can look like horns. And suddenly that long-eared owl looks pretty scary. Now, in the wild, when they're breeding, long-eared owls prefer to breed in an old crow's nest. Sometimes they'll breed on the ground, but that's a lot more risky because you've got a lot more predators on the ground. So crow's nests are where it would usually nest, something like that. So if they don't have many crow's nests, of course, what you can do is put up a pretend crow's nest. And that's what you see here. It's actually a nesting basket. So this is the nest box for long-eared owls. It's an open basket. And they can be put quite high up in a tree. And typically long-eared owls live in conifer forests, on the edge of the forests, sometimes in open countryside, but these baskets can be quite valuable in areas where there aren't many crows, or maybe the crows are being shot by the landowners because they don't want them there. Now, long ears, when they have their babies, which are very cute, their baby long-eared owls are also vulnerable because after only 2 or 3 weeks in the nest, you see that? We've got lots of photos, by the way, that we're showing everybody here, if you're on radio. So long-eared owls are chicks are very vulnerable when they're in the nest at that young age. So they grow up very fast, and after 2 or 3 weeks they'll go up into the trees, climb around in great big fir trees, well, a bit like that one over there, I suppose. And once they get up in there, the only way you know they're going to be there is when you hear them calling at night. And of course my choir is going to be helping me with that calling in a moment. Long-eared owls have been around for about 36 million years. Not this one, but the species. They've been around a long time. And yet, as I said just now, we don't think too much about them. So birds like the barn owl, which have a very high protective status, the long-eared hasn't. So we need to think more about long-eared owls. And part of the work I do is to try and encourage wildlife groups to go out into suitable places where these birds might live and listen for them. So, what do they sound like? Well, luckily we have the Wild Owl Choir. I'll tell you about Wild Owl in a minute, because that's me. Yeah. And they're over here in the corner, just warming up. Can I hear you warming up in a minute, second?
No! No! No!
Let's have a twit to woo. It's not an easy one. Twit to woo! Oh, that's a pretty good warm-up. Okay, now, long-eared owls, well, the mummy long-eared owl sounds a bit like blowing through a comb and paper. So it's a little bit like a... like that. See if you can do a noise like that after three. One, two, three. That's pretty good. Well done. And the daddy, the male long-eared owl, well, he's like blowing over the top of a glass milk bottle, which is like a... that sort of sound. Pretty good there. Now, I think you need some help here, don't you? So, everybody else? Female? Mary, how many did you say we had here? Yeah. Is it six? My eyes are going. So we had a... that sort of sound. After three, one, two, three. That's more like it. Sounds like somebody just burped, doesn't it? And the male sounds like over the top of a milk bottle after three, one, two, three. Oh, blimey, that sounds like a hippopotamus then, doesn't it? Goodness me, they're awful, aren't they? Okay, that's right. Now that the young, when they have young, they sound like a squeaking gate, which I can't do that because it's too squeaky, but it's like a... that sort of sound. Can you do that? That's pretty good. Pretty good. So very, very distinctive call. If you want to... experience long-eared owls, the best thing to do is to go to a place where they're often recorded. In the Mendip Hills is somewhere where, in this area, they're often recorded. Up in Stock Hill Plantation, which is the Forest Enterprise site up there. In around about June time, you can go into the car park there, in the, just as it's getting dark on a night like this, without any road breakers, and you can just listen, and you'll hear these very eerie squeaking gate noises coming from the forest. And that's young long-eared owls calling for food. You won't see them because they're very elusive and they jump around, they can throw their voices, but very distinctive sounds. It's quite an amazing thing to experience. Now you think that I'm going to open a box now, aren't you? But you're wrong. I'm going to keep you waiting a bit further. Okay, so move on a little bit longer.
So, are you into bird watching?
I wasn't particularly into bird watching before this, and I'd like to give it a go, but I never really got up to it, and I would quite like to do it.
Do you have birds in your garden?
Very rarely, because we have a dog.
Oh. But is that your brother?
No, just friend.
And do you have birds in your garden?
Well, we sometimes do, but our they don't seem to like our garden, even though we do have a bird table.
You might be the cat.
No, they never came even before that. I don't know. We have had a couple of sparrows, but only quite common birds. We have had a few rare birds.
So do you think you'll get more into owls after tonight?
Yeah, definitely.
And birds of prey. Have you been to any falconry centres?
I think I might have, but only once, and that was quite a long time ago.
So what about you? Would you get more into birds of prey after tonight?
Yeah, I would. Tonight was great. I loved seeing the owls, and I've been to the Red Kite Feeding Centre in Wales, and I thought that was brilliant, and that was sort of the moment
still
that
a bird on my shoulder, so
I thought that was really amazing to look at. And I love owls generally, but it's quite hard to see them and arrange stuff when you can see them, and it really is amazing.
I'm Mary Wood, I'm one of the trustees at the cemetery, and my particular interest is in the wildlife and the landscape and making sure that during the restoration, although we had to do a lot of... we had to make it look tidier, but we also had to improve the habitats for wildlife at the same time. And it's rather good because you can end up making it better access for people, but at the same time we're letting more light to the ground and making it really good for the plants and the animals at the same time. So that's really helped, and over the last 5 years a fantastic amount of work's been done, including making the buildings good again, and they are looking beautiful now, and there'll be lots of events. We're going to have a schools programme here, so kids will be coming in and doing work that contributes to their schoolwork, but in this fantastic, exciting environment.
So were you one of the original people who started, you know, trying to rescue the cemetery in the early days?
Yeah, I was, actually. It was about 1988, years ago now, when we had a big meeting in local churches, and the Friends group was formed from that, actually. And then out of the Friends grew the Trust in 2000 to carry forward the HLF project, when we were awarded £4.8 million to do the regeneration of the cemetery. And it's cost that and more, and of course it's going to cost a lot of money to keep it going in the future. We've got beautiful interpretation work now that's been done with the beautiful signs and sculptures. And
Many thanks to Mary Wood there, for one of the trustees of Arnoldsfield Cemetery. Also to Ian Maguire of Wild Owl for showing us all the owls, and for Anthea Page and all the good people, children of Bristol, who came down on our owl prowl, which took place earlier this month. This is Mary Poppins and Feed the Birds, and thank you very much for listening.
Early each day to the steps of St. Paul's, the little old bird woman comes in her own special way. Of crumbs. Come feed the little birds, show them you care, and you'll be glad if you do. Their young ones are hungry, their nests are so bare, all it takes is tuppence from you. The birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. Feed the birds, that's what she cries, while overhead her birds fill the skies. All around the cathedral, saints and apostles look down as she sells her wares. Although you can't see it, you know they are smiling each time someone shows that he cares. Though her words are simple, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag.